welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you recognize him, Chuck Springer, retired LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant. And where does he live now? He lives in Florida in my neck of the woods. Actually, he's further south, so it's a little warmer where Chuck's at. But yeah, he came to Florida. So I know it's got to be tough, you know, leaving California and your governor coming over here to your slumming in Florida. But we appreciate it. We love having you, Chuck. So thanks for making the move. And Chuck brings a unique perspective, having been with LAPD for his career and retiring, as a lieutenant. He's seen a lot, and there is a difference in how they do things over there. So I can't wait to hear, you know, his position on a lot of the stuff we're going to cover today. Please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to bring this quality content to you. We have our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Also, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. We have gunlearn.com, mymedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million people right now. Also, twobells.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com, and also fishorlandobass.com. Now, Brett, where do you like to take the wife, the kids, or the grandkids? Where is that place in Orlando?
I like to drop them off at the front gate of Disney World.
There you go. That's right.
That's where I like to take them. And then go fishing and go look at gators with our
buddy Zach. Yeah. You know, Zach has got at fishorlandobass.com. Zach has got a bass fishing charter. So you have options now, guys. When you're going to Disney, don't just stroke it off as a bad trip or one that everybody's going to enjoy except for you. Just the wife and kids are going to have a great time. Drop them off. Go hook up with Zach. Do the bass fishing charter at fishorlandobass.com. Or if you're feeling very adventurous and you don't mind losing a digit or two, do the alligator hunting where you catch and relocate alligators. That's a neat time with Zach as well. So yeah, Brett can show you the scars, but I don't want him to stand up because I don't know what he's wearing right now. But yeah, we've also got a shout out to Brian Birds with Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. What in the world are we going to be talking about today? Let me whet the appetite. Our first one, retired Philadelphia detectives. They go on trial in a perjury case, but it's back from 2016. It's a murder exoneration case. Look, these cops are in a world of hurt, and they're in their 70s and 80s, guys, and they're being taken to court for something they did back when they were active. Stay tuned for this one. And it's not good. It's criminal court. We have a jury rules that Oklahoma City police sergeant did not violate the Fourth Amendment in a 2019 shooting. Also, Richmond County deputy justified in shooting Brandon Hill, who was near a middle school. We've got former Mesquite officer, or he's actually police chief. His restraining order is denied, and the city seeks to replace him with a new hire. There's some drama going on there. You'll want to hear that one. Body cam shows moments before Maricopa officers shoot a man armed with knives. So this is not Maricopa County, where we had Joe Arpaio as the sheriff. This is in Arizona, Maricopa, the city, or the police department. So Maricopa City Police Department there. We've also, we got six teens arrested. This is the one that Chuck wants to cover. When undercover unit crashes into their vehicle after a failed jewelry store robbery in Canada, of all places. Let me tell you, it's impressive how they did it. I mean, it's pretty impressive. Even Chuck was saying that, and he was rolling with LAPD. So, you know, they know what they're talking about. So, so if you're ready, Chuck, you ready to start off with the old cops that are going being drugged in the court and stuff?
Yeah. You know, as we've discussed oftentimes in the past, along with some of your other panelists, poorly written article, they're not giving us any information as to why they believe that these detectives committed the acts that they committed. Kind of disturbing is one portion
let me read the story and then we'll get to the analysis. Is that cool with that? So Fox29.com, retired Philadelphia detectives go on trial in a perjury case. So we're talking perjury here from 2016. That's been a while ago, and it's involving a murder exoneration. So look, the highlights, opening statements, they began on Tuesday. So this is going on right now. It's a highly unusual case, according to the article, given that the men are now between 75 and 80 years old. These are the cops, and they're facing prison time if they're convicted. So we're not talking about a civil trial, you know, where wrong guy got put in jail, family's upset about this or that. You know, we're talking about a criminal trial, and perjury is the charge. They were all retired when a rape and homicide case from the early 1990s was retried back in 2016. So it was from the 1990s, but it was retried in 2016. They were called back to testify, and that restarted apparently a five-year clock, the statute of limitations for charging somebody with perjury. So after they retestified, and again in 2016, the district attorney, Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, he has a history of suing cops, being a civil rights lawyer in the past, but now he's the DA, and he charges former detectives Martin Devlin, Manuel Santiago, and Frank Jaspensky in 2021. And that's still not super recently, but that's, you know, what, 4 years ago. He charges them days before the statute of limitations was set to expire. So they waited. Now, it talks about a 20-year-old neighbor named Anthony Wright. He's the guy that ended up going to jail. The key piece of evidence was Wright's confession. His lawyers argued that it was coerced. The police denied it. Santiago and Devlin, two of the three cops, they're accused of lying about the confession. Santiago and Jaspensky, they're accused of lying when they denied knowing about the DNA problem. And Jaspensky is accused of lying about finding the victim's clothing in Wright's bedroom. So which of course is the dude that went to jail. So that's the nuts and bolts of the case. But as Chuck said, this is the information that we have to go on. We don't have a lot, but there is a criminal trial going on right now by the DA. So Chuck, this DA has a history of in his prior life of going after cops. So how much of that comes into play on this, do you think?
I mean, certainly there's probably a component to it. I'd kind of like to know, you know, were these allegations in play early in the first trial as well? And if so, as a retired detective, you know, I don't know if they were warned that they would be, you know, starting the clock again on any potential perjury charges. I may have said, thank you very much. I'm retired. Have a nice day. Yeah. Right. I don't know what they knew. Again, back to the article, a lot to be desired. What is the DNA exclusion problem? I mean, they don't give us any information. It sounds like they asked the lead detective on the stand to recite the confession, the 9-page confession from memory 25 years ago. And when he couldn't do that, the jury found the suspect innocent. I don't buy that either. I mean, if somebody asked me to recite something I did 25 years ago, I'm going to need the report right there to refresh my memory, especially if I'm 78 years old.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our minds tend to drift as we age. So again, poorly written article. Really unfortunate that these guys are in the sunset of not only their careers, or their careers have, you know, they've retired, but the sunset of their lives, and they're being dragged through the court system on information that is, to me, very limited based on the article.
Yeah. Now, guys, listen, people watch the show. Look, we don't have to cover, I get to select the articles that we're going to be talking about. And so it'd be easy to blow this off and say, yeah, we're going to be talking about maybe some bad cops and don't, you know, we're not going to do that. You know, so we have limited information, but it's news, it's stories. It may be not flattering the law enforcement, but we don't have a lot of information, but don't let, you know, we deal in facts, and police officers, you got to understand, we're built a little differently than most people. So we see things, or we have a tendency to see things in black and white, right and wrong. When other people see shades of gray, the lines are very vivid for us. I mean, it's very easy normally for us to tell. It doesn't mean we're always right. We also have a tendency to size people up pretty quickly and to make judgments, character judgments, all kinds of things. So we don't have a lot of the information. Now, look, I can only imagine being in my 70s and 80s and getting a knock on the door and wanting to, you know, put me in trial for something I did back then. Now, in all fairness, this is there's a 5-year statute of limitations that these guys did open up that door by going back and retestifying about an old case. I kind of wonder if some of that was orchestrated, Chuck, in order to be able to get that window, opportunity, the statute of limitations clock to start kicking over again, because it had already expired. But regardless, look, if these are bona fide bad cops and if they did something wrong, then neither Chuck or I, you're not going to find either one of us taken up for them. We don't. But if that is the case, why don't they have that information in the article? you know, why is it not there? So we are going to give them the benefit of the doubt until that information's there. But anyhow, we're covering it, and we cover the good stuff, the bad stuff, the stuff that's hard to cover. So you'll see it on the show. We're just not going to be covering one side of it. So, so Chuck, you ready to move on? Chuck, are you still there? All right. Go ahead. And there's just the two of us, Chuck. So you can leave your microphone, you know, open if you want to. That'll make it a little bit easier here. So there's no delay. Guys, we're going to go to our first story with a video component. And it's at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. So a jury rules that Oklahoma City police sergeant did not violate the Fourth Amendment in a 2019 shooting.
33. I think it's a cap gun, but they are shooting something off.
Show me your hands! Drop it! Drop the gun!
Shots fired, shots fired. Black male with a gray hoodie had the gun.
So, look, Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, normally not something we would be talking about when we're dealing with a police shooting, but we are in this case, and you'll find the tie-in in a second. So we're in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma right now. Federal jury sided in favor of an Oklahoma City police officer saying that the Fourth Amendment was not violated. Now, the decision comes after an Oklahoma City family was searching for accountability 6 years after their then teenager was shot by an Oklahoma City police sergeant. His name is Kyle Holcomb. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects people from unreasonable searches and seizures. Like, you know, the cops know this. A lot of the people on the show know this, but associate the Fourth Amendment with search and seizure. Now, just like you would the First Amendment with free speech, right? So according to court records, on March the 10th, back in 2019, a guy named Lorenzo Clerkley, he's 14 years old at the time, and his friends, they had a BB gun, and they're inside an abandoned house, and they're shooting at random objects. Now, police respond to a call, and someone reports that somebody broke into the home. But the police don't have all, this is all the information they have. So when they get there, well, let me just take this back. The article, I've only got one paragraph left in the article, and then I'll tell you what really happened, because like Chuck said earlier with the other story, there's stuff left out. Clerkey's family, so the 14-year-old's family, filed an excessive force lawsuit over an officer-involved shooting that occurred. But on Monday, the jury ruled in favor of the Sergeant Kyle Holcomb. So the jury sided with the police sergeant that was involved in the shooting. So what happened? Because the article does not tell us. So I'll tell you from my notes here. So it goes down pretty quickly. And the video, I don't think is too long, but at the 19-second mark, as you're watching this, you know, the police officers, they arrive on a burglary call, and they don't necessarily know that it's an abandoned house, but they just know it's a burglary call. And at 44 seconds into it, so roughly 30 seconds later, an officer, he's walking in there's a perimeter in the backyard, so it's a wooden fence. And so the officer's walking in the neighbor's side of the property along the fence line, trying to look into to see if he can see anyone breaking into the house or that was there. So as he walks along this backyard wooden fence, there's a break in the fence. It's damaged, and there's a huge gap, and he can see it in the backyard. And it appears that this kid, this 14-year-old, he's exiting, and he's got a firearm, but it looks like he's probably coming out of the house. And the cop immediately orders him to show his hands and to drop it. And then, you know, 2 seconds later, the officer fires his gun. And there's nothing else really noteworthy. They end up, you know, getting the other guys that were there. This kid goes down. They get the other kids that are in the house and stuff. It ends up being a BB gun. Of course, no way to tell that. And if you wait till the guy pulls the trigger, you know, you're likely going to be dead or seriously injured. So that's not the answer. So you've got a burglary, even though it's an abandoned place, you've got a burglary, and you know, you've got this firearm that turns out to be a BB gun. But even if he knew that it was a BB gun can still inflict serious bodily injury or even death in certain instances if you get hit in the right spot. But, you know, you take out an eye or whatever, you know, that's serious bodily injury, which would qualify for lethal force. So, Chuck, what do you think about this one?
Well, you know, the OIS portion, hard to see from the video because he shoots through a small gap in the fence. So I got a glimpse of, it looks like the kid coming out of a window. I can't be 100% sure, but after that, you can't see what he does. So I got to rely on whatever the officer's statements are that what he saw. Now, as far as the fact that it's a BB gun, it's also interesting to note when he's walking up, the officer is walking up, he's verbalizing and he says, okay, it sounds like they're shooting a cap gun. doesn't mean that there's no firearms involved, right? It's just he's consciously aware that something's being fired in there. He just doesn't know. He called it a cap gun. It turned out to be a BB gun. The problem really is the kid comes out the window holding a gun. And when that happens, your decision-making time goes almost to zero. You don't have time to sit there and try to assess, is that a toy gun?
All right,
is
Chuck, thanks. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And then when you throw the online option, it's almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody about what's really important here. It's supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. I mean, even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do, in spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they have a radio code. I have that radio code, and I'm going to give it to you. It's Radio 15. So type in Radio 15 to get 15% off your next purchase at Gauls.com. And hey, I've gotten a pair of their new Mission Made, tactical pants that are unbelievably comfortable, and they're nice. They're thick. They're well built. And I just got a $200 pair of Danner boots that are waterproof. Gauls.com. All right, now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that we're all in love with, and it's called the glove. But don't get stuck on the glove, guys, because they've also got personal protection. So in the days, rural protection goes beyond physical safety. It's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MyTech, which is a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. They're Eagle Protect nitrile gloves. They offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, we're not done. They're MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers. They actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact, and they continue the kill for up to 28 days, giving you peace of mind and helping you stay protected both on and off duty. And when safety is non-negotiable, you can trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. So learn more about how to equip your team today by going to compliantechnologies.com/MyTech, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. We left off talking about a story where we got a burglary going on by some kids. They got BB guns and the cops get called out. And of course, they're only armed with the information that the caller gave about a burglary in progress. So when they show up, they're doing a perimeter search, from the neighbor's yard. There's a break in the wooden fence where they can actually see in the backyard. And we have limited vision, but it appears that the kid that ends up getting shot by the cop is coming out of the house. And Chuck thought maybe it was a window. And we have to rely on what the cop said a lot because our vision is obscured by the fence. But that's also a good thing, because when you verbalize, your best cops verbalize, you never want to do a use of force without verbalizing. I mean, you don't want to be seen beating a bad guy into submission and not have told him what he needs to do to alleviate the pain, right? Or the pain compliance, right? I mean, you always want to give someone a command when you're using any kind of force. And so the cop was very good about, drop it, show me your hands. So, that he had something. And so the cop's verbalization backed up what he said in the report, what had happened. The kid had a gun and he ended up shooting the kid. Family's not happy about it. They took it to court and they lost, and the jury backed the police officer. Any more commentary on this, Chuck?
No, as a police officer, the last thing you never really want to shoot anybody, but you accept the reality that you may be in a position where you have to, but certainly you don't want to, shoot a 14-year-old that's got a BB gun. The problem is that split second decision making that, Graham versus Connor talks about. The kid comes out of a window. You don't know he's 14. I mean, he could look like he's 18, just be a tall kid.
But does it matter?
It doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter.
You got to make the decision. You got an instant to decide, is he not dropping the gun? Is he getting ready to turn towards me? So I think as far as the OIS goes, it's a good in policy and legal shooting. It's just one of those unfortunate things where it's a 14-year-old.
And let me just say this just for a point, and I don't know if Chuck and I haven't talked about, I don't know if he'll agree with me, but let me just point out that if it's an 8-year-old and that he's got a BB gun pointed at you, I'm not saying that I would do this. It depends on whether the individual officer, it really depends on what a reasonable officer would do in that situation. But whether he's 16, 26, 36, or 8 years old. If they have a gun or a firearm, you know, you, there's nothing in the law that says you're not justified. As a matter of fact, if you fear great bodily injury or death, you know, you would neutralize the threat, 8 years old or not. And it doesn't look pretty, doesn't sound pretty, but that's just the way it goes. If you don't, you may end up dead. And we just had a very young kid ambush a cop a couple weeks ago. Also, if I'm going up against a bad guy that's got a B, and I know in advance it's a BB gun, I'm probably still going to take the shot and use lethal against that, because I don't have to be in fear of death. I only have to be in fear of great bodily injury or death. So you don't even need the death factor. And BB guns can inflict that, or you can lose an eye or get shot in the temple. We've seen some damage done by these things. So it's still considered, you know, a justification for lethal force, even if you knew in advance it's a BB gun. So at least from my perspective. But we got 15 seconds. We're doing our second commercial break. I got the timing off a little bit, but we're going to be back on track now. Stick with us. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about one of Brett's favorite subjects, long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market last year at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, now being tailored for the civilian customer. And that means that now you guys can start getting your hands on some of this primo stuff. And their M5 AR 3-weight platform, nothing short of spectacular. Don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And we do have the quick light going, special going. And Alan Pearson, I forgot that you had won the giveaway already. So thanks for pointing that out. If you haven't won the goals, I keep saying goals. I need to stop that. The quick light giveaway, if you haven't won one in the last 60 days, type in the letter Q, give us your email address in order to be automatically entered in. That'll be a 24-hour giveaway. So we'll be doing that drawing after 24 hours. If you're ready to go on to the next story with a video component, Chuck?
Sure.
We have Chuck Springer here, retired LAPD. And of course, I've got 30 years with Tampa Police in Florida. And we are back at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. So we have Richmond County deputy justified in a shooting. It's the of a bad guy, Brandon Hill, who was near the Glen Hills Middle School.
Put your hands up. Shots fired.
I swear to God, don't move. I wanted you to do it. I'm not moving no more.
Where are you hit at?
I don't know. You're eating me in my chest.
So we have another instance similar to the one Chuck and I just talked about, that where some of the stuff going down is going to be off camera. But we do have a camera, we have a video, we have sound going. So, and look, if you guys want to see any videos that we talk about, obviously in a live show, so many things can go wrong. Trying to show live video in a live show, that's just a disaster waiting to happen, right? But we do have a version of the show that comes out the very next morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, the very next day, Tuesday through Saturday. And it has a version of this live show that producer Will puts together. But in that version, he'll embed every video that we talk about. He'll also put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys. And it all goes down right when we're talking about it. So when I say, hey, we're going to talk about a shooting, then boom, you're watching the video of the shooting going down with audio and sound. And then after it's over, boom, right back to Chuck and I talking about it. So it's a great way to watch a show. Again, 9 o'clock the next morning. So we're in Augusta, Georgia. And I'm going to Georgia next month. So an outside review determined that a deputy was justified in shooting a suspect last week in front of Glen Hills Middle School, according to the Richmond County Sheriff's Office. Now, Deputy David S. Hopkins shoots a guy named Brandon Hill on Thursday afternoon after Hill points a gun at the deputy, according to authorities. Now, you don't really get to see the gun pointed at the deputy, but you certainly, like we just talked about, you get to hear the verbalization of the deputy, which convinces me that it happened. It happens after deputies respond to a domestic dispute. And when they get there, the woman tells them that she knew Hill, the guy that ended up getting shot, and that he had stolen her gun and he left. So now the deputies are looking for him. They see him walking down the street. And now think about the information they've got. DV suspect, he takes the woman's gun, so they have reason to believe that he's armed. So the cop is in his patrol car, gets on his PA speaker, and tells the guy to show his hands. And instead, he pulls out the gun and points at Hopkins. Now, during this time, before the gun's pointed, the deputy stops the car, cracks open the door, and he's partially in and out of the car, and he's using the car as cover when he's dealing with this bad guy, because he has reason to believe that he's armed, and of course, he ended up being. So, but the bad guy pulls out a gun, points at Hopkins, who fires five times and hits Hill, our bad guy, in the chest. Hill is transported to the doctor's hospital in critical condition, and when this incident goes down, our bad guy was out on bond for burglary in the first degree. And not only that, the bond was revoked back in November of 24. And there was active bench warrants for him for a traffic case involving the police chase as well. I'd have to imagine that since his bail was his bond was revoked, that they had another warrant. They were looking to pick him up as well for that. So in my notes, though, because there's stuff in here or that happened that's not really portrayed, again, the short video. But if you start watching the 1 minute mark, the deputy spots this domestic violence suspect walking down the road in front of the middle school. We got to keep that in mind, too. He reportedly just stolen someone's firearm. So 6 seconds later, the deputy tells him to put his hands up through the PA system. And we've got 3 seconds later, deputy opens his driver's door and uses it for concealment while ordering the suspect to put his firearm down at gunpoint. So the cop's pointing through the door jam, you know, at the bad guy. And then at 1:14, so when the deputy opens the door and draws down the bad guy, 5 seconds later at 1:14, it to me, and I'm curious to see what Chuck says, the deputy has got two hands on his gun. He lets go with his left hand and goes for his microphone because he wants to talk to dispatch. It seems obvious to me. When he's doing that, you hear a gunshot. And I'm looking, and to me, the deputy's kind of, it looked like, you know, the hands are in position, we're holding the guns a little bit sideways, and it looked like, unless it was an accidental discharge, I didn't see the gun kick up like it would if the deputy pulled the trigger. It looked to me like maybe the bad guy had taken a shot at the deputy. He immediately takes his hand, does two-handed shooting, and shoots the bad guy, and one of the rounds goes in the bad guy's chest, and he goes in there, you know, first aid and all this other stuff, and then it goes in the first aid mode with a lot of blood and stuff. But I was curious what you thought about that, Chuck. We got almost 6 minutes.
No, I mean, overall, I think he does a pretty good job. You know, I don't know what their deployment numbers are out there. And again, as you mentioned, you can't see what the suspect does because the body worn video is covered by the door or something. But what's ironic is, and it's always interesting now with body-worn video, as prevalent as it is these conversations that the officers have with the suspects after they've been shot, right? The suspect admits to pulling the gun on the deputy while the deputy's there, you know, putting pressure on the chest wound. It, you know, he's basically copping out to messing up. So it's probably pretty certain that he pulled a gun out and at least started to point it at the deputy or maybe did, who knows. Again, that's something that you'd have to rely on the officer statements and maybe even the suspect statements since he lived. One thing that was a little strange to me was, you know, you're there by yourself. You've just shot somebody. I would probably prefer that you wait for at least one more unit to get there before you approach the suspect. But he does whatever he goes up, he approaches the suspect. Now, this is what I have a problem with. He doesn't handcuff the suspect. It appears that he picks the suspect's gun up before he runs back to his cruiser, turning the back on the suspect, who's not only not handcuffed, but doesn't look like he searched him, because sometimes where there's one gun, there's two guns. It looks like he dropped the suspect's gun on the grassy area next to the passenger side of his car, grabs some gloves, and then runs back there. Did he leave the gun there unsecured? Because, I mean, for us, you put somebody on that gun and they stood over the gun because, you know, body-worn video has changed things a little bit. But, you know, back in the day when we didn't have it, if that gun disappears, which has happened, right? Because somebody's buddy comes up and snatches it up, you know, now you're sitting there, you know, where's the gun? How are we going to prove that he actually had the gun to justify the OIS? But again, overall, I think in policy, legal shoot, some debrief issues to discuss, but good job.
All right. Excellent. That's what I want to hear. Well, look, we've got almost 3.5 minutes left, but not a lot of time. But I do want to cover the video that you mentioned, rumble.com. This is Butter. We have six teenagers arrested when an undercover unit crashes into their vehicle after a failed jewelry store robbery.
Boys, they are ready to do something. They're looking around. They're looking at the windows. Roger, stand by. They're out of the vehicle, two of them. They're paused up. They were going to do it, but now they're boarding back in. So this is confirmed. It was going to be jewelry store robbery. They're in the jewelry store. Up to the window, smashing in the window with a hammer. Stand by, stand by.
So I'll make this quick. Toronto, Ontario. Six youths. They're charged with failed jewelry store heist in Toronto. Look, they said it was a robbery. It looks to me more like a burglary the way it went down. There's a difference between the two, but I don't have time to get into that. But York Regional Police said that an investigation was launched on March 14th. They're looking for the stolen Acura TLX sedan. And authorities, they find it. Its air service is up.
Nice. All are in custody. That's probably big time.
And they've got video, they got audio, and they've got other cops in cool cars and marked units that are coordinating. There are six suspects observed traveling in this area. They see them get out of the stolen car with sledgehammers and bags, and they say, hey, these guys are up to no good. They're verbalizing. The units are standing. You know, they pretty much are have the area kind of quarantined, but they're out of the picture. They're waiting for them to do something. And then sure enough, they break it. They see them smashing the window in the jewelry store, and they're doing a burglary, which they call a robbery. And then they hop into the car and they're trying to get away. And the car starts to move. And yeah, the first unmarked truck just rams the front of that car. And then the guys start bailing out. But the cops do a really great job about bailing out and trying to track these guys down. And remember, you know, these guys, possible these guys being armed, I can't remember how many cop cars I put it in my notes, but there was six, yeah, at least about six vehicles with cops bailing out of them. A lot of chaos and stuff going on. We got about a minute and 45 seconds. Chuck Springer.
Yeah, it almost had an earmark of a surveillance that was planned, but I didn't have the information that you just mentioned. So maybe they just picked up on a stolen and set up on it. But, you know, here's the value of an aviation unit. The cameras that they have on these helicopters are phenomenal now. Even your run-of-the-mill patrol camera on a patrol helicopter, you can, you know, order it up with a doubler and boom, up to 6,000-7,000 feet you go. They'll never know you're there. And the quality is amazing. Couldn't tell if, you know, what altitude this aircraft was at, but obviously it was far enough away that the suspects didn't know it was there. Yeah. Right. And now they're in a perfect position to sit there and coordinate the whole apprehension like an orchestra. And when the cops finally show up, or, you know, they're told to come on in, you know, bravo for pinning the car in. We discussed pinning cars in last week. And if you don't do it right, how you leave a gap, a herd of elephants you get through. Well, this guy pinned the car in and it was not going anywhere. And then, you know, the cockroaches flee from the car, but you got, you know, cops everywhere. My only suggestion, I think, and I couldn't tell because the airship switched over to FLIR mode at one point, you really should have a mark black and white in that gaggle of police cars, because you want to protect against, you know, the self-defense, you know, the suspects claiming self-defense if they start shooting.
Very good. Well, guy, I like the way you think, Chuck. Time for a commercial break. It's our third one. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right. Time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. you can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett here, and also attorney Ken Apiaco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. And the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable, leoroundtable.com. And Ricky Johnson, thanks for the support, supporting words that you put there on Facebook. We appreciate it. We love our Facebook users. So thanks, guys. And we've been talking about, Chuck and I have been talking about the, well, they didn't really foil the burglary. It went down, it looks like, but they got the guys before they got away with the goods. But there were like three 16-year-olds and there were three 17-year-olds in that car that bailed out, and they went, you know, 10-15, they got all the bad guys, and they got the goods too from the jewelry store. So, Canada, we gotta call it out and tell them that, I don't know if they're going to become the 51st state yet or not, Chuck, but we gotta give them a shout out and kudos for doing a great job on police work, at least anyhow. So,
yeah. I don't think they'll be the next state, but good job. Absolutely. Kind of this incident kind of reminded me of our robbery homicide division, SIS, or Special Investigation Section. They used to identify serial robbery suspects, surveil them, let them do the robbery, and then take them down as they're coming out of the business. Now, that tactic has changed because there was a lot of OISs, but they used to do a lot of vehicle pinning because that was the go-to unit to handle kidnap for ransom cases. So they would do the investigative side of the kidnap for ransom, and then when they identified the suspects, you know, they usually took them down in a vehicle and pinned them in. Again, a lot of OISs. So I'm not sure if they're using that tactic anymore, but that kind of reminded me of those days.
Yeah, those are, you know, it's always the good old days. You know, when you come on the force, I started my career in 83, and it was always all the guys, the old timers I work with, because I'm a rookie, right? So they're always talking about, the good old days before I started, right? And of course, now we're all saying, the good old days, you know, when the guys that replaced me on, it's always, you know, it's always the good old days, right? Because, you know, when I came on, you know, there's like, you could shoot, before I came on, you were still shooting fleeing felons, and, you know, they were in the locker room, there were like bullet holes where cops would just charge their weapons in the ceiling and stuff. It was crazy. Yeah, but it was always the good old days, you know. And then of course, it always seems, at least when you're coming on the job, that you're always more restricted than the generation was ahead of you that's getting out, you know. So never changes from anywhere you're at, right?
Yeah, they call that progress. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
But people used to film us, man. We used to be able to grab the audio, the video, whatever, and we put it in as evidence, you know. But of course, you know, things change, you know, progression and stuff. So it doesn't mean that it was wrong at the time. It just means that things that we have evolved and things got different, you know. So, well, look, you ready to do it? We got about 6 minutes and change. So, okay. If you're ready, we've got a very interesting update article about this police chief. I'm kind of curious. You know, it's the St. George, Utah is where it's from. And stgeorgeutah.com is the website. Former Mesquite police chief restraining order denied, city seeks new hire. So again, we don't have all the information, but a federal judge just got involved in this. He denied a former Mesquite police chief, McQuaid Chelsea's request to prevent the city council from ratifying his termination and allowing the city to move forward with hiring his replacement. Now, the court ruling was issued on Wednesday, on Wednesday, February the 19th, and it denied Chelsea's motion or preliminary injunction to reinstate his salary, a challenge to his efforts to fight his dismissal. So he's really going all in on this thing. The decision marks the latest development in a legal battle that's embroiled the city for months. So this has been going on for a while. Chelsea, our former chief, has pursued legal action against the city on two different occasions. His first lawsuit, he filed in federal court in 2023, alleged defamation and violations of his rights as a police officer. And after the federal court dismissed the case, he refiled it in state court, and the litigation is still ongoing. His latest lawsuit, was filed after his termination in January. It claims the city violated his due process rights by failing to provide a proper termination hearing. But the court's ruling on Wednesday denied his request for a restraining order to halt the city council's vote, rejected his motion to reinstate his salary as the lawsuit moves forward. And it says that with the legal roadblocks removed, the Mesquite City Council is now set to officially ratify his termination in an upcoming meeting, and they're going to begin searching for his replacement, which I would have thought they would have already done. Prior to his termination, now here's the secret sauce. This is what happened. He was under scrutiny from both the city officials and his own department. He was fired on January the 24th, first after there was an internal investigation, and there was also a no-confidence vote by the union, the Mesquite Police Officers Association. The union, which represents, of course, the officers at his agency, took a vote last fall over concerns being raised that the chief's leadership, about his leadership, and there were allegations of retaliatory behavior and misconduct. So, you know, once you lose, you know, the agency and the respect of the troops you work for, right or wrong, and they do a vote of no confidence, it's got to be extremely hard to do your job from that point forward. What do you think, Chuck?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a couple things that are telling here. First of all, again, the article leaves a lot to be desired. You know, they talk about allegations, they talk about actions, but what are those actions? What are those allegations? So we don't know. It's a he said, she said. Right now, as far as we're concerned, obviously folks in the city are probably going to be a little bit more knowledgeable. But he's lost in court twice already. You know, he's had two judges deny his request. So that's not looking good for him. You know, it'd be time to simply throw in the towel and go. You know, it's ironic. A lot of times you'll get people in these positions that think that they can't be fired. Well, you just because you're chief doesn't mean you can't be fired. Somebody hired you, somebody can fire you, just like, you know, us regular cops, you know, if we do something wrong. But yeah, it's telling that, you know, I don't know how big Mesquite, the police department is there. I didn't do that research. If it's a smaller agency, I know the dynamics there are a lot different than bigger agencies, you know, like LAPD. I mean, there's thousands of officers that I never met, but you work at a small department and, you know, you're going to know everybody. So it's a lot easier to corral those folks and say, hey, look, we're going to vote a vote of no confidence on this guy. You're in or you're not. If you're not in, then we're going to be looking at you funny every time we look at you. So you know, sometimes the vote of no confidence telling, sometimes it's a political football, you know, it just depends. But yeah, it doesn't look like this guy's got a good chance of keeping his job.
Yeah. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. Maybe he shouldn't, you know. Isn't there a female sheriff over there in California? Isn't it like Santa Rosa County, if I'm not mistaken, the female that doesn't want to let go?
We talked about that a few weeks ago. And again, that was an article that was fraught with a lack of information, but it didn't sound like she was doing a very good job.
Well, there was a little thing about a relationship with the city manager or something too. Like, and there's that, all kinds of stuff going on, but she's dug her heels in, no pun intended. And she's not going anywhere, but was it Santa Rosa?
That rings a bell.
Yeah. I'm thinking so. Yeah. And you know, there's so much drama with that story. It comes up in the news cycle a lot. I just skip over it normally because I just hate to keep talking about the same thing over and over again. But man, I tell you, it is like, she brings a lot of drama, and that agency, right. I know they're done. It's just like, let's get ourselves, if we're in the news, let's be in the news for good stuff, not for this stuff, you know, but
yeah. Kind of a side note, you know, the mayor of LA just got rid of the fire chief after the big fires there. I think primarily because the fire chief came out publicly and was very critical. That would be my guess. But there's a political giant right there, the city of LA. You don't see that happening very often, but it did.
Yeah. Good point. Well, we've got about a minute left, Chuck. And let me ask you this question. I know from my perspective, I think it's there. Do you see obvious differences between policing on the West Coast as opposed to the East Coast where you're at now?
That's a hard question to answer because I haven't really spent a lot of time on the East Coast, at least around police officers. You know, I spent a week in New York once, and I haven't had any encounters with the Florida folks, for any particular reason other than our neighborhood deputy, but that was more of a, you know, a social engagement interaction. You know, I'm sure there is, you know, LAPD, you know, starting in the 60s, really kind of developed into a very professional department. That doesn't mean that other departments didn't, but they were very rigid in how they, you know, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, right to the point that they're shooting somebody. Right.
Right.
I see some of what I've seen on the East Coast. It seems like sometimes the deputies can be, I don't know what the right word is. I don't want to say not professional, but, you know, very in your face. You know, you go up to talk to somebody, stand over there right now. You know, in L.A., it would have been, sir, I'll talk to you when I'm done. Please stand over there. Where, you know, here I hear a lot of more. Get your ass over there.
Yeah.
Pardon my language.
All right. Well, guys, we got to get close this up. But great having you here on the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD. And they also have that Guitars for Cops special going for $1,000. You get a cool guitar signed by one of your favorite country music artists. Guys, support our sponsors, Gulls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, Aero Precision, GunLearn, My Medicare, Safeguard, Two Bells, FisherLandoBass.com. And we'll look for you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.